Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Hello, this is part one of a four-part program where I present the story of my journey over the 76 years of my life. I was born in the London East End borough of Stepney in May of 1946, the early period of post-World War II Britain. My mother was Ivy Greaves and my father Jim Greaves. In this part of the story, I reflect on the roles my parents played in World War II and how my father came with a squadron of Spitfires to be stationed in Darwin during the war, and as a result at war's end, bought his wife and his young son, that's me, to Australia as 10-pound Poms in 1949. From my earliest memories of living in the then heavy industrial area of Yarraville, I reflect on what life was like growing up and moving around from house to house in the mid-1950s until we moved into a new housing commission estate in the then Melbourne suburb of Jordanville, where life, for a boy, was brilliant. I share many stories that all revolve around how healthy a lifestyle we led, a lifestyle that was almost entirely revolving around being outdoors, forming local gangs, playing, exploring, and using our imaginations. I recall the importance of the Saturday afternoon picture matinees and of the introduction of TV. School was an important part of my life, and I share how I excelled in my studies until contracting scarlet fever, and as a result of missing school, things went somewhat awry, well, for a while. So without much more of ado, let's make a start. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and I've been your host on Listen to Older Voices for 18 years. This is the last program in the Listen to Older Voices series, and so I thought I might share with you my story. I was born in May of 1946 in the East London borough of Hackney. My parents were James or Jim Greaves, and my mother, Ivy Susan Greaves, formerly known as Ivy Somerset. One of my great regrets was that I never spoke to my parents about their story. However, what I do know is that my mother drove an ambulance during the Blitz of London, and my father was an aircraft mechanic and worked on Spitfires. In fact, he came with his squadron to Australia to be stationed in Darwin to help defend Australia against the Japanese. And while he was here, he discovered how wonderful the country was. And when he returned to England at the end of the war, he said to my mother, "I've seen the future and it's in Australia." So it was that my parents packed up and with their very young baby came to Australia in 1949. At that time, I was only 2.5 years of age, so my recollections are very vague. In fact, in some regards, I think they're more memories of what I was told than what I remember. My first true memories, though, are of the house we lived in Yarraville, which was very close to the chemical and industries located at that time in Yarraville. And I do remember occasions in the evenings where my mother would have to bathe my eyes due to the sulphur from the chemical plants being carried by the air and, of course, getting into a young kid's eyes very easily. My memories of that time are very scant. I do remember there was a corner shop literally on a corner. My mother would take me there and I would be allowed to buy a penny's worth of broken biscuits. My father worked at a place called Dickie's Towels, which wasn't far from where we lived, and he had the wonderful job of having to untie all the knots that formed as the different materials were used to make the towels. It was hardly a stimulating job for a man who was very highly skilled as a toolmaker. At some stage we moved from there to the country town of Wangaratta. I can't recall what it was that my father did there, but I do recall on Sunday mornings kneeling on my bed looking out of the window and watching sheep being driven down that road, which was a dirt road. I guess Wangaratta's grown up a lot since that time. From there, and I must have been about the age of 5 or 6, we moved to a place called Hartwell, which is close to the Melbourne suburb of Camberwell. There my parents rented rooms from a lady called Mrs. Levine. I do recall she had a very large house, but I do also recall very musty smells. but a very beautiful large back garden which I played in regularly. I became friends with some children just down the road at what was then the Hartwell Fire Station. There were three girls, Glenda, Rhonda and Gillian, and an older brother, Geoffrey. Their father, of course, was a fireman. This was a place of great fascination because the fire station also was adjacent to a very, very large open area, literally paddocks of grass, places to hide and play in, and stables which were located at the rear of the fire station, which I assumed at the time were to house horses that were used at the fire station, but I never really got to verify this. They were wonderful years, and I remember they were filled with play and great joy. I went to Campbell Central School. I actually still remember the number of the school. It was Campbell Central School number 888. Of course, being a young boy, the meaning of 888 hadn't dawned on me at that stage, but it reminds me as an interesting oddity to these days. I know the school no longer exists now, but I have also many fabulous memories of peppercorn trees and the smell they gave, of playing in the, out in the yards with the other kids. School was wonderful, and I have to say, I was a good student. I really, really enjoyed my school years, and I look back with great fondness of those times. There's so many stories I could relate, but there was so much more to come. Let's move on from there, and from there we moved down the beach to Aspendale, and the house we were renting almost backed onto the seashore at Aspendale. So again, I have great recollections of many days just playing down in the beach, and Ozone Avenue was the road we were in. I remember that now, and it was a dead end street, and the beach was at the end of the road. So yeah, life was wonderful for a young boy. But things became a little bit more clearer, and certainly I was beginning to find myself when we eventually moved into a housing commission house in the then suburb of Jordanville, which I believe now is called, well, is part of now of Greater Chadstone, but it was Jordanville in those days, and we were in number 1 Jindabyne Avenue, Jordanville. The whole estate was brand new. There used to be orchards, fruit orchards, and I recall that when we moved in, they were still trying to remove massive roots from trees that had been established in the backyard. I can recall we could look out over the backyard, and there were just, seems to be, for a kid, miles and miles of openness. There were just open fields and a creek at the back of the road, which I believe is now, well, I know, is now Power Avenue, but when we moved in, it was just an open creek, so a source of great fun. There were lots of other kids about my age, and I think the year was around about 1956, so I would have been getting on for 10 now, and we formed our first gang, the Tiger Gang, because we all barracked for Richmond, and just fantastic years. Life was so easy for a kid. There were very little restrictions on us. I'm sure there was a form of stranger danger in those days, but it just didn't appear to be in our lexicon. Our parents never needed to worry about us. As long as we were home for dinner, what we did during our own times was entirely up to us. And boy, did we do it. We used to roam. We would roam literally for miles, and it was miles, not kilometres then. And the Tiger Gang, which was mainly five of us, it was myself, Keith Osborne, Warren Williams, Donald Stockwin, and Colin, I can't remember Colin's surname. And Warren and Donald both had younger brothers, so they sometimes hung out with us, gave us a gang of seven, but it was mainly the five of us, and we got up to all sorts of things. When they eventually started filling Power Avenue in, filling the creek in to make Power Avenue with stormwater drains, we would wander for miles in those drains, investigating and lifting lids up and suddenly finding ourselves in sort of major roads with cars going by. There was a railway line very close by, and that railway line was the division between our territory and our hated enemies, the Scurra Gang. And we would often battle for control of the railway track because it was on a very high embankment, the railway. It was above ground level. And, of course, playing on the railway lines was hideously dangerous. And I'm sure we were told many, many times not to do it. But, of course, we did it. It was a single track, only a one-way track when we moved in, so it was fairly easy to keep your eye out for an approaching train, and they really were noisy. Red rattlers were what they were called in those days, and they did make a lot of noise. So whoever controlled the railway line controlled the territory, so the two gangs would battle backwards and forwards, but I don't remember anybody actually ever getting hurt from these so-called battles.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
I'm Rob Greaves, and it's time for me to share my story with you. There were just so much to do as a kid. We would go every Saturday afternoon to the movies at the local picture theatre, which was in Oakley. We would be given money for a bus, but it was only about a 3 mile, or what was that, about 4 to 5 kilometres maybe, walk. So we would often walk it and save that money to buy, not fish, but chips and potato cakes on the way home. That was almost a given, so it was worth the walk to do that. The picture theatre, well, that was some sort of semi-organised bedlam. You can imagine several hundred kids in a theatre on a Saturday afternoon, where you started off with cartoons, the inevitable cereal, and then an interval where all hell would break loose and literally the Jaffas would be flying, and it was just crazy stuff. And then after interval, there'd be a movie, but we just loved it. And it was a feature of the week to head off to the Oakley Picture Theatre. There never seemed to be a lack of things to do as a kid. I've mentioned some of the play we did. We also sort of were very innovative in terms of not really realising it at the time, but in terms of recycling. Every Sunday morning, we kids would gather outside one of the houses, and you'd bring toys or games or things that you were tired of playing. You'd put them on the ground there, and you'd just sort of pick and choose from somebody else's stuff, things you could take home and use and play with, and they would take your stuff. So it really was very early recycling before recycling became de rigueur. School was good. Primary school was excellent. Can't remember the name of the first one I think it was Jordanville Primary School, but they opened up a brand new school called Bayview State School, and I think from about age year 4 or 5 I went to Bayview. It was so brand new, the fields were still had plough furrows in them, so playing cricket and things like this, they did make us give us a cricket pitch, but of course you hit the ball and it hit the furrows and it just get lost. And so, but it was great fun. It was fantastic. And as I keep saying, life for a kid was fantastic and great fun in those days. And I was a good student and I had a wonderful time. Come time to go to high school, I was scheduled to do an examination for a scholarship to go to a private secondary school, and I came down with what I think at that stage was scarlet fever. It was pretty bad, and so I missed the examinations and ended up at Waverley High School because I didn't have the scholarship. And for reasons which perplex me to this day, I was put in year 1D, and I'm afraid that basically reflected what they thought were the dunces, which, to this, as I said, to this day, escapes me. Why? Because I was a good student, even though I'd missed those final exams. I loved high school too. I was had a pretty eclectic love in terms of subjects. I was terrible at art, but I was great at the history of art. I enjoyed music. I enjoyed science. Science was fantastic. Maths I was okay at, but I struggled because I did miss so much in terms of year grade 6 in that transitional period with maths because of my illness. My parents did send me off on Saturday mornings to a tutor, but I think part of the problem was we didn't actually have a proper maths teacher. We had used to have always have stand-ins from teachers from other sort of subjects who didn't really know what they were doing and were just reading out of books and never really explained it. And I was the kind of student that if I was shown how something worked, if I was shown how something was done as opposed to just being told, I would get it. I would get it really easily. And that's why I liked the science. I had fabulous science teachers. One in particular comes to mind, Mr. Duke. And You know, if we were talking about how a heart worked, he would have us kids dissect, you know, a heart from an animal, probably cows and things like this, and we would check out how it worked that way. You know, if we were talking about how acids and bases worked, he would actually give us hand-on experience in a laboratory. You know, if we were talking about gases, you know, hydrogen, for example, he would have us cut the top off the milk bottle, put in two carbon pieces out of a pencil, fill it with water with a little bit of acid, hydrochloric acid, put a battery on it, and split the water into hydrogen and oxygen, and then collect the hydrogen, put it in a container with the container upside down, usually a tin, and then put a match to the bottom, and it would pop because the hydrogen would explode. So it was all hands-on stuff, you know, and that's what I really, really enjoyed most. Sadly, I was also very naive, and it didn't take long for some of the kids in the class to realise not only was I loving what I was doing, I was good at it. So, you know, they would come up to me and curry favour by letting, you know, asking me if could they take my science book home and copy my work. And that all came to a head when I did one fantastic project on where we went out and we followed a creek and we looked at, you know, algae and fungi and what was under rocks and things like this. And I did a fantastic project. And one of my so-called friends copied it almost verbatim. And when mine came back, I remember it was written right across in red, "Is this all your own work?" And that cut me to the quick, because not only was it my work, the kid that I lent my work to got the credit for it and I didn't. Yeah, well, so be it. That's the way life went in those days, you know, if you weren't the favourite of the teacher. But look, life at high school was great, but I was a bit lost. I didn't know what I really wanted to do. Oh, I didn't mention, you know, in those days, there was you did things that you couldn't get away with these days. You know, we had bottle drives, we had newspaper drives, where the parents would come along with cars and trailers on a Saturday morning, and we kids would sit in an open trailer and collect bottles from houses and collect newspapers from houses and gradually fill the trailers up with them and be sitting on them. Highly dangerous, but we just had a ball. And of course, it wasn't identified as so dangerous in those days, and it was a way of schools making some money on the side. I also remember tuck shops. Tuck shops were fantastic. Tuck shops were just sort of like a glorious place where there was just so much good food. And for us, good food was a pie smothered in sauce or confectionery. And of course, if you could convince your mother to go and do a session at the tuck shop, that meant you could basically choose whatever you want and you didn't pay for it, because your mother would pay for it then. I assume she paid for it. So tuck shops were just brilliant things. Of course, the food, you look back in these days and it was anything but healthy. But that was the life we lived in, you know. We played in the dirt. We played on the roads. We played outside. Playing inside was just never heard of. You just didn't do that. You were always outside, except there was the most inclement weather. And then you would listen to radio. Prior to television coming, radio was the thing. And I was given a small radio set in my room, and I would voluntarily go to bed. I think it was about 6 o'clock at night, because that's when, for the next hour or so, all the serials on the radio were aimed at kids. You know, there was Superman.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman.
And now, the Adventures of Superman.
There was Tarzan. There was the Air Adventures of Biggles. There were just so many shows, and you just got glued to that radio. Radio really was the theatre of the imagination. And being a kid with a great imagination, I just enjoyed those radio programs so very, very much. It's interesting that radio played a part in two of the most memorable incidents in my life. The first was waking up on a Saturday morning and learning via my radio of the death of John F. Kennedy. And the second was walking through the city with a Walkman and learning of the death of John Lennon. So it's interesting that those two very profound moments in my life were provided to me by the medium of radio rather than television. I do remember when television came in 1956 because of the Olympic Games. And, of course, it was bloody expensive. And so what my parents did was they rented a TV in combination with a family, another family who lived adjacent to us. I mentioned Colin. Well, it was Colin May. That was his surname, Colin May. And the Mays and our family shared the television. One week we'd have it for 3 days and they'd have it for four and then we'd swap round. And the televisions were coin in the slot. So, you know, as you watched, you paid for it. And it was terrible if you ran out of coins. So you made sure you never ran out of coins. And we just loved it. I mean, we took to it like a duck to water. You know, The Adventures of Rin Tin Tin, The Mickey Mouse Club. There were just shows which were made for us. And of course, as we got older, what we enjoyed changed. You know, I remember Have Gun, Will Travel. They were just, it was fantastic. All black and white, of course. Now, I mentioned that the televisions were coin in the slot, and that reminded me that things like gas, you also paid at that stage with gas by putting a coin in the slot. So you always made sure you had threepences and sixpences and one shillings in the house because you were always feeding either the television or the gas meter in order to survive. It was that fantastic. Milk, of course, was also delivered by horse and cart. And milk was put in milk bottles on your doorstep and your mother would leave the empties for the milkman to collect and he'd leave the milk back. It was great until the sun got on the milk or the magpies would peck the tops of the aluminium tops on the milk bottles and get into the milk. And talking about milk in sun, that also reminds me that back in the primary school days, kids were given free milk. I guess it was all part of the post-war thing of building kids up because of the lack of nourishment during the war years. I loved the milk at schools, but like all kids, except if that milk was out in the sun and then it would turn and you were basically forced to drink the milk. So some clever bunny came up with the idea of providing straws that were either chocolate or had chocolate or strawberry coatings inside them, probably chemicals, mind you, to take away the taste of the foul milk when it was turning. Life was just so different to how it is today. It was so very, very different. Like most kids, I was given pocket money, but it wasn't as much as I needed. So I took up delivering newspapers in the mornings by bicycle. And that was great in summer, great in spring, because you'd be up fairly early. I would pedal my bike to the newspaper shop. You'd have a sack which went across the bar with pockets on both sides. You know, newspapers would be, you would have to roll them all up and you put them in there. You had your round and you would take off on your bicycle and you would deliver those newspapers. Wasn't so good in winter because some of those winters were pretty vicious, and sadly for a while I had a paper round that had a lot of dirt roads, so it was just almost impassable. And my darling parents, mostly my mother, would get up at the crack of dawn and actually take me to the newspaper shop, wait till I gathered all the newspapers up and put them in their order, and then she would drive me around my newspaper round so that I wouldn't get drenched and wouldn't come home muddy and sodden. Yeah, I haven't spoken much about my parents except at the beginning of the program. And I have to say, I think most of us believe we had fantastic parents. I know I had fantastic parents. I didn't see a lot of my father because he was often out working. Even when he wasn't working 9 to 5 in weekdays, he would go out on weekends and he was part of a collective that was building houses out in Altona where all these men would work on a house, build it. Then one of them would get that house. They'd move on to the next one. They would build it and somebody else would get it. Sadly for him, He was at basically the end of the line, but just before it got to his turn, the whole project folded. So he worked his butt off for months and months with little or no return for that. He was a very hard worker, and I guess he came from that generation that believed that his role was to provide for his family, and by God, he worked hard enough to do that. My mum, she was a great housewife, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. She was always cooking and baking. She looked after us kids fantastically. She was very supportive. She was very intelligent, and she was a pocket dynamo, my mother. She was 5 foot nothing. She nearly always had a smile on her face. She always welcomed my friends around the house. But if anybody crossed her, well, they only ever did it once. Let me put it that way. So, yeah, I look back at my parents with great fondness and reinforce something I said right at the beginning of this part of the program, that to my great regret that I never sat down and spoke to them about their life and what they went through, because they would have had a story like most of that generation that went through the Second World War and was born in the 1920s, have some fantastic stories that should have been told. And so as a kid growing up in Jordanville in Jindabyne Avenue, I could always rely on my parents to support me and help me. And I don't actually ever remember getting hit once by either of my parents, by hand or by belt or anything like this. And I can't believe that I was a perfect kid. I know I wasn't. But I think they had their own ways of dealing with me, and all I can say is to Mum and Dad, thank you for dealing with me the way you did. I hope that I've brought my boys up the same way. Do join me next week for part two of my story, where I want to become an astronomer, yet end up as an industrial chemist. But the evolving music scene in the 1960s and the oncoming counterculture had other ideas for me. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Uniting Victoria Tasmania. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.